KTD News. The morning show is next. Support for WGTD comes from Music by the Lake, hosting Broadway television star and Tony Award-winning baritone Brian Stokes Mitchell with the celebrated Chicago Philharmonic on Saturday, August 10th in Williams Bay. Use code WGTD10 at musicbythelake.com for a special offer for WGTD listeners. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I always feel a very special sense of privilege when we can sit across from cancer survivors and talk about the Relay for Life. And that is what we were doing today on the morning show, talking about Kenosha's Relay for Life, which is coming up on Friday and Saturday, August 2nd and 3rd, out at UW Parkside, so right up the road from us here at WGTD. We have, first of all, in the studio, Matthew Elmer, who works for the American Cancer Society. He is Senior Community Development Manager and has a major hand in kind of the organization of the upcoming Relay for Life event in Kenosha. And with him, three very hardworking, dedicated volunteers who also happen to be cancer survivors, Michelle Genwine, Christina Spears, and Kathy Vescova. And they are here to tell their own stories, their own encounters with cancer and surviving cancer, and are going to help us all understand why events like the Relay for Life are so incredibly important. So, Matthew Elmer, Michelle Genwine, Christina Spears, Kathy Vescova, we welcome all of you to the morning show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. Matt, before we start talking about the Relay for Life, I think it would be great to hear from you something about the American Cancer Society, and although most people can guess kind of the overarching mission and purpose of the organization, maybe you can help us understand, maybe with more clarity, why the American Cancer Society exists, its central purpose.
Yeah, absolutely, and thanks again for having us. So the American Cancer Society is a very important organization that definitely has a big hand in fighting cancer directly. We are one of the largest funders of cancer research, which is really important with the multiple types of cancers that are out there. We have a worldwide touch as well. So a lot of the funds that come into our organization have impact locally here in Kenosha, statewide in Wisconsin, and then of course across the globe. So really important for people out there to support our organization and continue to fight, because as we all know, especially in this room here, we have a lot of cancer survivors out there who all, you know, need the support and the research that, you know, we can help with. So,
very good. So explain this whole notion of Relay for Life. And of course, it's not something unique to Kenosha, nor unique to Wisconsin. How long have there been these events called Relays for Life?
Yeah, it's kind of it's crazy how it actually started. It started with one person who set out to make a difference and make an impact on cancer. That was Dr. Gordy Klatt back in 1985, actually. So it's continued on since then and thrived. But Dr. Gordy Klatt set out to walk a track overnight for a 24-hour period, and he did just that. And ended up raising that first year over $30,000, which wow. 1985 funds is pretty significant.
And one guy.
one guy. But, you know, a lot of people rallied around him, of course, and that's, you know, the my favorite part about the organization is the people that rally around you to all fight cancer together. But so after that, it just kind of multiplied from there. We've been in Kenosha now for, this is our 24th year. So a lot of communities across the world have jumped on it and, you know, organized their own Relay for Lives. We're in 2,500 communities across the globe, 27 countries. So it's definitely a worldwide movement, and it all started with one person, which is pretty incredible.
Cool. Incredible. So describe, although I don't think it's easy to do, but describe to our listeners what one sees and experiences when you come to the Relay for Life. I don't mean so much like all of the individual things that happen. We'll get to that. But just in general, what does a Relay for Life in Kenosha look like?
I think it's more of the feeling, I would say anyways. You know, when you're walking down to the track where all the festivities are, it's a feeling, the emotions. You see a lot of our participants in purple shirts that are cancer survivors. You know, the event starts off with our opening ceremony where we have some guest speakers, honorary cancer survivors who share their stories. We then open it up to a survivor lap where all those purple shirts walk the track and we support them, we honor them. Also, you know, remember loved ones lost to cancer. So I think the feeling, the you know, what you see generally is what kind of hits us most. There's a lot of passionate people out there as well who all have someone they love that's been impacted by cancer. So it's very significant, inspiring as well.
Mm. That is for sure. And, of course, the thing that I think amazed me the very first time I came to Relay for Life was how, although there is this core of seriousness, it was amazing how much joy was part of the event as well. I mean, that it isn't quite as singularly somber as one might imagine when they hear that it's this event for people who have survived cancer or remembering people who have lost their battle with cancer or whatever. I mean, it's actually much more than that.
Yeah, we have some of the strongest people out to our events who've faced head-on their cancer diagnosis, and you know, we just love to support them and make sure we have a lot of fun throughout the event as well. So,
very good. Is there any particular reason why you became part of the American Cancer Society?
Yeah, I mean, personal touch with cancer through loved ones, relatives, specifically an aunt who's been diagnosed twice now with breast cancer. So that personal kind of touch on you know, knowing someone directly always kind of ignites something within you. And I've loved participating with Relay for Life ever since I started 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that, you know, that the passion that you have to fight something thrives. And when you have people who rally around you with all the same, you know, mission, makes you want to do it even more. Mm-hmm. So,
for those of you just joining us, we are talking about the upcoming Kenosha Relay for Life, August 2nd and 3rd. And we've been hearing just now from Matthew Elmer, who is Senior Community Development Manager for the American Cancer Society. And it is under the auspices of the American Cancer Society that events like the Kenosha Relay for Life take place. The Relay for Life in Racine has already occurred a little earlier in the summer. We have with us, in addition to Matthew Elmer, three hardworking volunteers for this year's Relay for Life, Michelle Genwine, Christina Spears, and Kathy Vescova. And it's great to have all three of you with us here as well. And all three of you come to Relay for Life not only as volunteers, but also yourselves as cancer survivors. Let's start with you, Michelle Genwine. Tell us a bit of your story, and actually set the stage, your story before cancer entered the picture. Where are you from originally, and so on?
Sure. I am from Kenosha, Wisconsin. I lived here most of my life. I went away to school for a few years at UW-Whitewater. Mm. After college, I spent approximately 10 years in Illinois for a career, moving around from city to city in retail operations and retail management. I did decide at a certain point to come back to Kenosha. And when I came back to Kenosha, it was nice to be with family and friends. I eventually met my spouse here in Kenosha, and fun fact, I was set up on a date with him by his twin 16-year-old sisters at the time.
Okay.
I got involved with the American Cancer Society back in 1999. And I kind of believe that everything happens for a reason. You might not know the reason at the time, but I was at home on maternity leave, resting about a week before having my first child, and I got a phone call, totally unsolicited. Phone rang, answered it, and it was a volunteer from the American Cancer Society, and they said that they had a program going at the time that if I was willing, they would like to send me some materials in the mail for a campaign, and could I please address them to all the neighbors and put a stamp on them and mail them?
Oh.
And I thought, that's pretty simple instructions. And at the time, I was working an office job, and I had missed being at work since I was told I had to be at home for a week or so before having my first child. And I thought, geez, if that's all I have to do is address a few envelopes and put on stamps, send it. You can probably send me two or three times as many as you want, because I've got a lot of time on my hands.
Huh.
And that was my first encounter with the American Cancer Society.
Wow. So the timing was really propitious.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Great timing.
Yeah.
And then I want to say about probably 3 years later or so, I had just given birth to my second child. And at the time, I didn't necessarily think anything was wrong. I was happy about all the weight that I was losing rather quickly. And I thought, get rid of some baby fat and I'm going to have my shape back in no time. And then I started having some abdominal pains and I started having other symptoms. And I thought, this is kind of going on for more than just a few days. This might be kind of serious. And it was in January of the year 2000. Well, actually, it was in December going into January of 2002. And when my son was born, he was rather large. He was probably one of the largest children at the hospital, 11 pounds, 9 ounces. Mm. So a lot of that baby weight came off quick. But then I continued to lose that weight, and I lost 45 pounds in about 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
And the abdominal pains were pretty bad. I wasn't eating much. I wasn't drinking much. We went through the holiday season. My family noticed that I wasn't as happy and peppy as I normally was. And I had kind of had to fight my way into the doctor's office. And the staff at the time said there was a lot of flu going around, and they said, you must have the flu like everyone else. And when I went into the office, the doctor had said, oh, so you're the one who has the flu, right? And I said, if you say so. And as it turns out, I described my symptoms, and I told them that I had lost 45 pounds in 2.5 weeks. And they just shook their head and couldn't believe it. And I said, well, I was here at this very hospital 2.5 weeks ago when I gave birth to my son. Go check the records. You'll see how much I weighed. And they put me on the scale, and the look on their face was just incredible.
Mm.
And eventually they had done some in-office tests and said that they indeed saw some reason for concern. And they had given me kind of the option of either staying at the hospital and being hospitalized until they could figure out what was wrong, or going back home and coming in every day for outpatient tests. Wow. And at the time, I had a toddler who was 3 and my son who was 2.5 weeks old. And my husband had already taken time off to be with me when we had my son. And in my head, all I could think is, these aren't really good options. And the doctor said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, what do you think I should do? And after a lot of debate and tears, it was, I guess I'm staying. So they wheeled me out in the wheelchair, and my husband took one look at me, and he said, this isn't good, is it? And I said, no, I don't think so.
Wow.
And unfortunately, I laid in the hospital for a couple days before they could figure out exactly what they thought was wrong, or at least had a good idea. And I had a consult with a gastrointestinal doctor, and they immediately wheeled me up to do a colonoscopy, and they found a mass in my colon. And they did a few more tests to make sure it was nothing else or nothing related to the childbirth. And eventually, I was told that I would need surgery. And I thought it was odd that they said, well, you know, you'll have your surgery in a day or two, and we'll consult with the surgeon and we'll see what he says. And next thing you know, it was, okay, instead of having surgery on Monday, you're going to have surgery on Sunday. And then it was, wow, instead of having surgery on a Sunday, and I thought, well, who does surgery on the weekends, you know?
Yeah, right.
You're having surgery tomorrow. And I thought, this must be kind of serious.
Wow.
And so the surgeon took out the mass, and he told my husband he thought it was cancerous, but they were going to send it off. And he said, just let her rest. And she's been through a lot, lost a lot of blood, with the birth and the side effects and the surgery. And he said, we'll talk next week and we'll get a plan of action. And thank goodness for the surgeon and not only his skills, but his willingness to go the extra mile. They had taken out 31 lymph nodes at the time to get tested. And of the 31, one was positive for the cancer. So they had declared it stage three as it had spread outside the tumor and into my body.
Right.
And it meant that I had to not only have the surgery, but had to have chemotherapy. And it went pretty smooth at first. And then we hit a stretch where every 5 weeks I was in the hospital having adverse reactions to the chemo. But I can say I've been very fortunate. And for someone who was diagnosed with stage three colon cancer at a young age, every year now that my son turns a year older, I'm a year further along in my path of survivorship.
Exactly. And that and cancer is further and further in your past.
Exactly. Which, yeah. And so my son is 16, so that means that I have 16 years of survivorship.
Wow.
So I am very thankful.
With good reason. I think it's one really important thing about your story, among many things, but this jumps out at me, is the fact that it's probably an especially tricky situation when something else is already happening in your life. In your case, the birth of your second child, and that certain symptoms you're experiencing or the understandable tiredness after that or whatever, in a sense, can mask something else going on that is just as significant. And so it's probably a cautionary tale to take symptoms very seriously, even when it might be easy to assume that they are a fairly natural, benign outbreak of something else. But in your case, what was actually going on in your body was cancer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I do say that all the time to people that, you know, it was, in retrospect, now easy to see why I was anemic throughout the pregnancy, why there were certain symptoms, but those symptoms were masked, or one would never think someone who was 35 years old at the time would be developing colon cancer.
Wow. An important story. Michelle Genwine, one of the volunteers for the Kenosha Relay for Life, with us on the morning show today. Right next to her is Christina Spears, who is a volunteer as well. Like Michelle, has her own team for which she's the captain. And so the Relay for Life's an important part of your life. Tell us your story about what brings you to the Relay for Life.
Well, I started with the Relay after my son was diagnosed, actually, with colon cancer. He had pain in his side and went to the ER, and they thought it was appendicitis. As soon as they did the CAT scan, they said, we think you have cancer. You need to see your primary care doctor. He was also diagnosed with colon cancer.
May I ask how old he was at the time?
He was 41.
Okay.
And he passed, well, he was actually 40. He had just turned 40, and he passed in 2016.
I'm sorry.
Because unfortunately, his was stage four. It had already metastasized in his liver over 60%, and that was the pain he was feeling.
Right.
So I started walking with the Relay, and we got a team together, actually, a few weeks after he passed. Our Kenosha Tap in town on 60th Street, who helped care for my son with me, got a team together, and we put on a pig roast, raised money, and they have actually put on a pig roast every year in memory of my son, Ray Davis, Jr.
Uh-huh.
And we've actually, this past year, raised $1,700 again for the team. And after he passed in 2016, I was then diagnosed with breast cancer in 2017.
Wow. As though cancer had already not been an unwelcome guest in your life.
Yeah. It was a tough time for the family, but we made it through. And I'm now a 2-year survivor of breast cancer. So we take each day as it comes.
Right.
But I do suggest, you know, he passed right before his 43rd birthday. So he was young.
Yeah.
You know, and I think all young people should take note. Colon cancer is way up there in deaths for young people. You know, that's, I think, the number two killer.
Mm. Wow.
In young people.
Did it make any difference, the fact that you had already, in a sense, traveled this road with your son? Did that make any difference for the better? I mean, for as staggering it had to be yourself diagnosed with cancer, do you feel like, in a sense, you kind of understood the journey better because you had already, in a sense, journeyed it with your son?
I understood it a little bit better, but my treatment was completely different than what his was. There were different tests. There was different things to look for.
Hmm.
And my risks even are different than what his were.
Interesting.
Because I have a higher risk for other cancers even now. Even though I'm a survivor, there are other cancers that I'm at a higher risk of getting.
Hmm.
So for him, it was only quality care. He did go through chemo. I didn't have to go through chemo. I went through radiation.
Uh-huh.
So my treatment was completely different than his.
Right. So when you do the Relay for Life now on August 2nd and 3rd, it will be for two reasons. I mean, it will be,
yes,
in a sense, for yourself, and also you continue to remember, of course, your son.
Yes, that's my team is Ray's Kick and Stomp and Cancer Team. So it'll stay that name after my son.
I like that a lot. We appreciate you sharing your story, Christina Spears. And finally, Kathy Vescova, who is also one of our survivors in the room today, here to tell her story. So tell us what we need to know about your journey.
Thank you. I'm from Kenosha, born and raised. I did work in the finance industry, and I worked in the Racine market, and M&I Bank at that time had a team, and they invited me. That was back in the 90s to join the team, late 90s. And so I did it, you know, and but I didn't have a big involvement with cancer. But I enjoyed it. I did it with that team for a couple of years. And then I transferred to a Kenosha office and decided to get my own team together. And it was a M&I team. And we did that for several years. And my sister was diagnosed with cancer. And she had a blood cancer. So another reason to, you know, fight the fight. And continued having a team every year. But then I was diagnosed in 2010. And I like the colon cancer, but I you're supposed to go at 50, and I kept putting it off.
Mm.
So I'm a big advocate for you to go get that check.
To get the colonoscopy.
To get the colonoscopy. I went at, I was 60, and I knew Dr. Sethi, and he did the test, and he came into the room, and he said, "You have cancer." And he wouldn't even let me leave till he made the appointment with the surgeon.
Wow.
So
right then and there.
Right then and there.
Now, remind me, I don't remember if you said this or not, but were you experiencing any symptoms that led to that?
Nothing at all.
And so it was a complete surprise.
Complete surprise. The day before I went, honestly, I was talking to my manager, and it's like, I really don't feel like going. You know, everybody, they don't want to do it because of the prep. You know, I said, no, I'm going to do it. And it's just a good thing I did. So I had the surgery, and it did move to my lymph nodes.
Mm.
So I had 6 months of chemo and, you know, went through that, the port. And the, you know, it's like you want to get your port out. You want to just get back to normal life and continue to go for blood work all the time. You know, every week I think I was going for a check, and 3 months later, they found something. So I had a PET scan, and it had metastasized to my liver. So they sent me up to Frederick, Milwaukee, to a specialist. And through this whole time, I thought I felt great, you know.
Wow.
So, but my husband had been sick all summer. They were treating him for an ulcer. They didn't know what was wrong. He was there with me, and I said to my doctor, I said, you know, my husband's been sick. He lost like 45 pounds in the summer. So they checked him out, and he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Wow.
And they didn't let him leave the hospital. I scheduled my surgery, and I had my surgery October 10th, and he had his October 11th.
Wow.
We were across the hall from each other. So it was a tough year, 2011.
Do not want to.
We'll not forget that.
Yeah.
But his was really far along, and they gave him 6 to 9 months, and he made it 7. Sorry.
Yeah.
I get emotional still.
Of course.
So 2012, he passed in 2012. 2013, Cancer Society asked me to be the honorary survivor. So I did that, and we developed Viva Vescova. That's our team.
Mm.
And still have that today.
Wow.
But I've been a survivor, and Dr. Knight said, you've had stage 4 cancer, and you made it. So
you sure did.
I still go every year, but, you know, I have survived.
You mean to check out, to get
I get, get blood work, yeah, check out. I got my next appointment all set up already. So.
Absolutely. No procrastination from now on.
Yeah. So I am a survivor since 2012.
Wow. One thing that always strikes me when we have these kind of gatherings, and it's certainly true today, is that there are these through lines that you all share. I mean, in some ways, and in this particular case too, I think everybody, it's colon cancer?
Colon cancer.
And for you, Christina?
Breast cancer.
Yours was breast cancer, but your son had
colon cancer.
So anyway, there are these through lines, and yet there are also wide variations in terms of the specifics, and it just underscores for me the importance of every story being told, because cancer is more than what you experienced, and beyond your three stories is a whole world of other stories of what this has done in people's lives, and also stories of how people survived it. So it's so important to share these stories. I imagine Matthew Elmer, in doing the work that you do, you've heard by now thousands of stories like the three that have been shared today.
I have. And it inspires me even more every day to do more and fight more and try to rally everybody around that, because a lot of people might not necessarily know about Relay for Life or why people participate. And so I think it's a very important aspect, and someone should definitely come out to the event and experience it so they can get a sense for how people have fought and what to look for, too, as well, and some of their family who might experience the same similar stories.
Right. I want to hear from each of you. I want each of you to choose one aspect of the Relay for Life that you find especially meaningful or that has really made a big difference maybe for you and your family or friends as you have participated. And I know Kathy coordinates the survivor tent, so we'll leave the survivor tent to her. But Michelle, pick one facet of the Relay for Life, maybe one event that occurs at the Relay or one facet of it that is especially meaningful to you.
Sure. It's hard to pick one, trust me.
Yeah.
I would say the one thing that I like about Relay for Life is that it's a family-friendly event and that there's lots of fun activities, and you can definitely bring children out there and not be worried about, you know, are they going to be bored? Is there going to be anything for them to do? Are they going to want to leave in 5 minutes? That's definitely not the case, and my children have been going out to Relay for Life since 2003. And
they
have gone from being the little kids out there and spending the night in the lawn chair to being the mandatory volunteers because mom says so. but they work hard.
Yeah.
But they do it out of the goodness of their heart and because they know it's important.
Wow. And I'm just curious, does your son, who's now 16, does he understand, in a sense, his significance in your cancer story?
I think so. Originally, he definitely did not. And even when he was young and he went out to the track, he would see mom walk the survivor lap and he would see everybody clapping for all the survivors. And he would clap, but I don't think he realized what was going on.
Right.
My daughter, who was also kind of young, but 3 years older, I think she caught on quicker. But at this point, they both know and they both understand.
Right. Very good. Michelle Genwine. Christina Spears, can you choose a facet of Relay for Life that means a lot to you?
I like the luminaria, you know, where they read all the names in honor or in memory of the people. Because, of course, I have my list. Everybody has their list. And they add names every year. But I just really like that. But my grandsons, they go out there. They know what the luminary is, and they all have their sayings because you write a saying on the bag in honor, and they put their Uncle Ray's out there. They each have, like, my granddaughter wrote a poem to her Uncle Ray. And to that they walk the track, they look for them because they're all there.
And so they look for their particular luminaries.
Yeah. They look for their luminaries, and they bring them over in front of the team, and they put them there. And that means a lot to them. So that's what I like.
I can understand why. Kathy Vescova, tell us about the survivor's tent.
Well, at the survivor tent, any survivor can come. They can. We invite everybody to come and register even that day. We already have several people that are registered, and we are there to honor them. We give them a shirt. I have a friend that's baking over 300 cupcakes so they can have a cupcake. And we give them a balloon, and then we kick off the ceremony after our honorary speak. Then we walk the first lap with the survivors. I'm holding their balloon. So it's a very special time. Trying to think what else we do in with the tent. I mean, it's a place for them to come and sit and rest, you know, if they want to. It's just really a nice way to honor our survivors. So we do invite everybody to come and register as a survivor and join in with us.
Very good. So, Matthew Elmer, for anybody who has heard this and wonders, well, how can I be part of this? I want to support this important cause. I don't want to be on the sidelines. What would you tell them?
Yeah, we're always looking for dedicated volunteers who want to come out and help us prior to the event or day of the event. It could also be after with cleanup. There's a lot of work to be done for those 16 hours of the event, so we're definitely in need of some volunteers who want to come out and give an extra hand. You can definitely register as well as a participant, as a survivor, as a team on our Relay for Life website. Which is relayforlife.org /Kenosha WI. You can also join us on Facebook if you're on. Just search Kenosha Relay for Life. We have a lot of promotions and information that's transmitted through Facebook, so everyone's aware of the schedule and what teams are doing as far as fundraising goes, which is another thing, too, as well as come out to the event. You can set up a campsite with your family and friends. You can host a fundraiser or just come out to the event and spend money as well, because all our teams are looking to raise as much money as possible for the mission. So
right. So you can come attend this event and buy pork sandwiches and cupcakes and little art things that people have made. And there's just a whole array. There's all these different booths and tents and so on. It's really an incredible gathering. And part of me wants to call it a party, because there is this aspect of it that feels like a joyous party, but of course, it's not a frivolous party. It's with the most serious sort of mission at the heart of it, but a gathering that celebrates life and celebrates courage, and that is a very important part of the fight against cancer that goes on. If people want more information, is there a website they can reach out to, or should they reach out directly to you?
Yeah, they can call me with any questions. My office line is 262-523-5574. You can also go to our event website at relayforlife.org/Kenosha WI. And like I said as well, check us out on Facebook, Relay for Life of Kenosha. So.
Very good. Matthew Elmer is Senior Community Development Manager for the American Cancer Society. And with us as well in the room, Michelle Genwine, Christina Spears, and Kathy Vaskova, sharing their respective stories as cancer survivors. We so appreciate you being part of the morning show today. It was great to meet all of you, and we wish you a very, very successful Kenosha Relay for Life on August 2nd and 3rd, and much happiness and good health in the years to follow. And thank you again for being part of the morning show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To finish out today's morning show, here is a portion of the conversation I recently recorded with Tony Award-winning singer Brian Stokes Mitchell, who is going to be singing in the Music by the Lake series in Lake Geneva on Saturday evening, August 10th at 7:30 p.m., a concert with the Chicago Philharmonic featuring Broadway favorites. I asked Brian Stokes Mitchell about the wide range of characters which he has been able to portray on the Broadway stage.
It's one of the things that I've loved the most about it is it's giving me this great opportunity to explore all of these different human beings. And that's kind of what you get to do as a performer. As a child, I remember I had a term for it, but maybe from the time I was 6 or 7 years old, I used to look at people and watch people, and I wished I could, my term was blow myself into them. And feel what it felt like to be them. Did it feel the same to walk for them that it does for me? Do they see colors the same way that I do? Do they hear sounds the same way that I do? You know, what does it feel like to be them? And, of course, I could never do that, but what I realized is much later on in my life, that's what I end up doing as an actor. I kind of blow myself into these different people and these different personas and with these different walks of life and points of view. And it's very eye-opening to be, I think, an artist and particularly a performer because, you know, that saying of walking a 1,000 miles in someone else's shoes. In a sense, as a performer, you get to do that. You have to fall in love with the person, whoever it is that you're playing, whether they're, you know, a darker kind of soul, like in Kiss of the Spider Woman or Jelly's Last Jam, or even in Ragtime, where Cole House Walker ends up going, or King Headley, the August Wilson play that I did, or whether they're somebody lighter like Fred Graham in Kiss Me, Kate, you know, or Don Quixote in Man of La Mancha. But you get to explore all of these different personas, and I think it's really wonderful because it allows anybody, and you don't even have to do this professionally. You can do this in your community theater, in your high school. It's why I think arts are so important in school, particularly, is it allows people to see something greater than themselves, to realize there's more than themselves, and it gives people a great sense of empathy and understanding, and you kind of embrace your life, and you understand how you're different, how you're the same as everybody else, and kind of what connects us all, and that continues to be what I love to do, not only with films and television and Broadway, but also in my concerts as well. I kind of like to embody these different characters from the songs that I'm singing.
By the way, I wonder what it is, how is it a different experience to, for instance, be a part of something brand new exploding on the scene like Ragtime in 1998 versus bringing to the public a show that they already know like Kiss Me, Kate, for which you won the Tony, or something like Sweeney Todd or South Pacific, when you are, in a sense, treading in the shoes of those who have gone before you in that show, in that very role which you are now performing, how different are those two experiences or undertakings for you?
Well, there are a lot of differences, but a lot of similarities as well. The main difference is, of course, is you're creating something from scratch that nobody has seen before. They may have experienced it in a book or in a film, but especially in a musical, that's a very different kind of art form. So you get to define what this character is going to look like, walk like, sound like, as opposed to doing something like Kiss Me, Kate or Man of La Mancha. The audience has an idea of what these songs are already, the idea of what the show is, and what happens with the show. So in that sense, you're trying to rediscover or actually discover new things about the character and about the songs. And also make that connection, because this is the most important thing, I think, for an actor, is you have to make a very personal connection to those characters. So even though I listened to the Richard Kiley album a lot when I heard Man of La Mancha, and Angel Pinzo when I was listening to South Pacific when I was younger, and I stole a lot from those guys, by the way, in their technique, because they're big baritones as well. When you finally get a hold of those roles to play on your own, you have to find a personal connection. What makes me respond to this person? What would I do in that situation? And also, I made a very conscious effort when I approached the song The Impossible Dream, for instance, to do it differently, because that song is one of the most beloved songs in the world. Mitch Lee, who wrote the music for it, told me that when he goes to Germany, or when he went to Germany, he's since passed away, and performed that song, the Germans would come up to him after the show and say, "Oh, thank you for writing The Impossible Dream. That's so German." And he'd go to Japan, and the Japanese would say, "Oh, thank you for writing The Impossible Dream. It's such a Japanese song." And it's the hallmark of a great song is a song that everybody can relate to like that. And so what I wanted to do is discover what's going to be different for me in that song. And I decided to tread in what I call the spaces of the material, as opposed to Richard Kiley saying these long, "Dream, the impossible dream," you know, these long phrases. And I thought, let me pull that apart a little bit, because that song is more, for me, a question and answer. You know, the question is, to dream what? Answer, the impossible dream. To fight who? The unbeatable foe. So there was this implied question in the spaces, and I thought, let me put a little space in there. And it kind of allowed me to rediscover and invent the song. So that's what you try to do when you're doing a new role as well, I think.
I love that. What is it like for you to step on the concert stage, where you are, in a sense, shorn of the trappings of a full-staged production? No set, no costumes, and in most cases, no castmates. And in what way is that an experience that feels like less than something, and maybe at the same time more than something?
Yeah, I have to say, I think if I had to pick one thing to do of all the things that I've done, television, film, voiceovers, all of that, Broadway, it would probably be concerts. It's what I love the best. Yeah, it almost feels like everything that I've ever done and been trained to do feeds best into the concert world. And I love it because, for one thing, it's always different. Every audience is different. Sometimes I do a concert with an orchestra, sometimes like I'm doing with the Chicago Philharmonic, a fantastic orchestra, by the way. I'm so looking forward to working with them again, or playing with them again, as I like to say. Sometimes it's with a jazz band. Sometimes it's with a trio. You know, sometimes it's just with a solo piano. And it's always different, and every audience is different, and it's one of the things that I love about the theater. But unlike the theater, where you're doing 8 shows a week, it's the same show every time, and you're exploring the spaces, I can change the show up as much as I want. I can throw in different songs. I'm working on a new album now called Plays with Music that's going to be released in this fall. And so I'm introducing many of those songs in the concert as well. And you have a kind of different way to play with it. And because it is just me, I have all kinds of freedom. I can say what I want. If something just pops into my head, if something happened during the day, I like to make storytelling a part of it as well, because what I want people to be left with, and this is largely in my control when I'm doing a concert like this, I want them to feel happier, more joyful leaving than they did when they came in. For me, the theater in general and the arts in general, but particularly the theater and concerts, for me, are kind of like a church. And I feel like a good church, when you go to church, you should leave church feeling much better than you did when you walked in. More hopeful, more joyful, more excited, more empathetic, more connected, more yourself, more curious, more all of those things. And that's one of the things that I try to connect people with, because I like to connect with those things. And I think sometimes for those that want to go there with you, when you bring that energy onto the stage, it's kind of a contagious energy that hits the audience as well. And it becomes this wonderful synergistic kind of energy exchange that happens between the audience and not only me, but the orchestra and the conductor and the people on stage as well. And it's just a wonderful way to make a living. I feel like the luckiest human being in the world.
Right. Well, I felt very lucky to be in the audience for your concert in Lake Geneva 9 years ago. And I wonder if you could just take a second to tell our listeners about maybe a couple of high points that are going to be part of the concert on August 10th.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the first high point, of course, is being able to perform with the Chicago Philharmonic. Scott Speck is conducting this particular concert. And just to be able to sing with an orchestra and all of the colors and range that they bring to the evening is a wonderful thing. And in this concert, I'm kind of mixing favorites up, familiar songs, as some songs that I've done from other albums. You know, I'll be doing I, Don Quixote, and most likely Impossible Dream from Man of La Mancha. And I'll be doing some other songs from older albums, but I'm also doing some of the songs that I'm doing on from my new album, Plays with Music, which is largely a symphonic album anyway. From that, I'll be doing Getting Married Today, which is kind of a crazy tune because I actually sing all of the roles in that, and it's a very fast patter song. I also do The Man I Love, which is interesting. I did it at a show originally called Broadway Backwards here in New York, where men sing women's tunes and women sing men's tunes, and I fell so in love with that song. And it's one of the ones that just gets a wonderful crowd response that I'm going to do that. And there's a new song that I started doing called Wizard Every Day, which is written by two young songwriters, and Nico Benson and Elizabeth Suggs are their name. And it's kind of a Halloween song, which is one of the reasons I was attracted to it since I was born on Halloween. But it's like any really great song, it's more than that. I get callings for songs, or they call me when I hear a song. Immediately a song would hit me. Impossible Dream was like that. What a Wonderful World, which I'll also be doing probably at the concert, is one of those songs. There's certain songs that just hit you immediately, and this was one of those songs, and it's just a really beautiful, beautiful song. It's funny, and it's heartwarming, and so I can't wait to hear what happens with those songwriters as well. But it's going to be a feel-good concert, basically, and I hope that people are going to be really happy that they came. I know that I'll be happy that I came.
Brian Stokes Mitchell will be in concert at Music by the Lake at George Williams College on Saturday evening, August 10th, 7:30 p.m. And for more information about that night's concert, you can go to their website, musicbythelake.com. And make her your
have found her, never let her go. Once you have found her, never.